What's going on, Bulls fan? This is Peter Szczecki, Pro Bull, the class of 2018, and you're tuned in to the It's Bruin podcast. Go Bulls.
You have to understand those who came before you. You can't just play for me.
Payoff pitch. Brutscher pulls it. Deep to right field. And this game is tied.
Every day is to make the university extremely proud. To make our alumni extremely proud of what we're doing in the program. Culture and work ethic and all of those things. Those are living, breathing things.
Are you kidding me?
This is ripped, the first Hogan, and there is your game winner. The South Florida Bulls can celebrate. They are headed to the Super Regionals for the first time in school history.
If you don't have the expectation of getting to Omaha, and playing well in Omaha, you probably shouldn't be coaching Division I baseball.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to this edition of It's Bruin at McEwen, a USF baseball podcast. I'm here today with the full Bruin crew. I got all three of my co-hosts today. I've got my brother, Matthew Giardino. I've got Adam Cartwright and John Kaplan along with me here. It's our first podcast in almost a month. Our last show was dropped on August 29th, and that was with USF baseball assistant coach Chris Cates. Great episode. If you haven't got a chance to listen to that, definitely check it out. But yeah, that, you know, when we talked to Coach Cates, that was right around when the school semester was starting and football season was starting and all of those things. So, you know, as USF fans, we've been also enjoying the beginning of football season. And football are at 2-2 right now, just coming off of a game against Miami, but now headed to Tulane. So we're going to talk about that in a moment. And basically what I want to do on this show, other than our little football segment, is I just want to dedicate some time on the airwaves to the Pro Bowls. Kind of criteria for being included as a Pro Bowl is I'm highlighting players who ended their career at USF. There are some guys playing professional baseball as well that had a stop at USF or played at USF for a while but didn't finish the career there. And I think that I kind of just wanted to focus the list on people who were either drafted directly out of USF or who signed as undrafted free agents directly out of USF. So when we get to that part of the show, we're going to go through every active Pro Bowl from this past season. We're going to go through the list in alphabetical order by last name. So it should be pretty fun to just see what all these guys have been up to. We got guys at all levels. We have major leaguers. We have indie ball. So it's going to be a fun thing to get into. So with that, I'll get into the first segment. Just talking about USF football. You know, it's been an interesting season so far. The game against Alabama was exciting there for a while, as was the Miami game for the first half. Any of my three co-hosts that would like to chime in with their thoughts on USF football? John, what do you got?
It's been a little bit of a roller coaster ride. I think we can all agree we're beating the opponents that we need to beat. I was definitely more impressed in our showing against Alabama than I was Miami. Getting shut out in the second half is not ever a good look. And, you know, we're going into conference play, hopefully with confidence still high, because we're playing, in my opinion, and I think widely regarded, the top two teams in the conference outside of us. You know, Tulane on the road is never going to be easy. Thankfully that hurricane stayed east, because I've been watching that pretty closely. I was hoping that we didn't get canceled. And then we've got Memphis at home, you know, and then UAB's not having a real strong start to the season, but at 1-2, but you know, it's a team that really embarrassed us last season, followed by FAU, who did the same. So the first 4 weeks of conference play are going to be all telling to me. I would really like to see more from Byron Brown through the air. And I would just like to see more consistency from our wideouts, because the only thing that really seems like they're showing up to play every single week is our defensive line and our running backs. What do y'all think?
Yeah, I
man.
think for me, I think it's really hard to gauge so far, what we have as a team, especially considering, we've played against two teams that are, I would put, in my opinion, quite inferior, and then two teams that are most likely going to be, top 8 seeds, top 6 seeds in the playoffs. So we haven't really been able to play a team that, would be considered to be more in our stratosphere when it comes to talent and overall resources. So I think it'll be really interesting to see what that game will look like this weekend. And I think you bring up a good point about, Byram. Let's see what he could do against a pretty similar opponent. Obviously an in conference matchup, and our defensive line, they've shown some ability to get pressure. Obviously that was a little bit of a struggle against Miami, but also throughout this whole season, I think Cam Ward's only been sacked once or twice. So I don't think too many teams are going to be able to get pressure on him because he's so elusive. But overall, excited to see what the Bulls have this weekend. And I think our running backs have shown at time that they're made for some big moments, especially against Alabama. We had some good breakaway runs, but definitely interested to see what's going to go down this weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, certainly battle tested early. Got two top 10 matchups there in the top in the first 4 weeks. Thought we played Alabama pretty well for about 3.5 quarters and let it fall off the wheels there at the end. But again, a couple plays here and there, and it's a different conversation in that last half quarter. Miami, I thought we just kind of got away from our identity. I think we're a very very dynamic running offense. I think our rushing attack, kind of comes at you from a lot of different angles with a lot of different bodies, and Wright and Joyner and Byron Brown's running ability. Again, the deep connection probably, it needs some touching up. And once that comes, I think it's going to be, a very good offense. I mean, right now scoring over 30 points a game and game, putting up over 400 yards per game. So it's not like it's completely broken. There's some good things from a 2-2 team that's going to head into conference play. I think it is going to be very telling what happens. I think it's good we get Tulane early. I think they're a pretty good test, pretty for us early to see where we're at. Two teams in the conference for me that I think really everyone has to watch out for are the two undefeated teams, and that's going to be the military academy, Army and Navy. They've been very good to start this season. Particularly for me, Army, which is good. I think they're the better of the two. USF's going to avoid them in the regular season. We're going to have to see Navy. They're pretty good as well. And the thing about them is they're so unique because of what they bring to the table, and they're so dynamic in how they attack you, and they're so disciplined. And so you have to do your job, because if you don't, they will, and they're going to put up a lot of points on you. And that's what they've been doing early.
Yeah, I think I
Sorry,
like
go ahead.
a lot of points from y'all. I think one thing that Matt brought up was Byram's elusiveness. I think that we're actually going to be able to see that play more effectively against another G5 opponent. I think it could be kind of challenging to scramble and create time and space against some of these, highly ranked Power Five defenses, the athletes. That's a different level of athlete that's out there on the edge at linebacker that can contain him. Whereas we saw last year, and even Byram's first year, AAC defenses generally have had a hard time slowing him down. So I do expect the offense to really produce, and has to run through him. One thing that was a little encouraging, Johnny touched on his passing. I think last week it got a little bit better, and just from the sense of he averaged 8 yards per attempt, which was pretty good to see. I think he's and that, I think as he faces lesser competition, not that Tulane's bad, they're obviously one of the best, probably three or four teams in our entire conference, but it's just not the same level as Miami or Alabama. So it's going to provide more opportunities for Byram to scramble and create plays. But yeah, we will Well, I think we'll do one more thing for football. I would like to hear everybody's score prediction for the football game this weekend. So I'll start. I'm going to say that the Bulls end up winning this one 31-27. What do you, who wants to go next? Matt.
I think it's going to be a pretty close game all throughout, but I think the Bulls will pull away in the fourth quarter. I think my final score will be 38-24.
All right. Who's next? John, what you got?
Man, I'd love to just lie, but I gotta take Tulane 33-26 final.
All right. There has to be one bad guy. It's fine.
It got to be the Cowboys logo guy.
Right? What you got?
Yeah, I'm gonna go 35-28 Bulls.
Okay.
I got nothing in terms of analysts for that. It's just
a gut. The gut. Yep. That's where I came from. I came from the gut. Yep. Nice.
One other thing I want to bring up too, just really quickly, is the whole kicking situation we saw in the last game with true freshman Nico Gramatica. I think he kicked a 58 yarder and a 51 yarder, and to me, he's really solidified himself as the guy. It was surprising to me to see us take out Nico for that very important field goal kick. And if it was me, I would have kept him in there. He's got the hot leg, and after that penalty, I think it was a 40 yard field goal, which it's getting into a little bit more of an unsure territory. So that's something interesting that I'm looking forward to keeping an eye on.
Very, very, very fun. Because it seems like Gramatica is going to be the distance kicker. If he's not the total kicker from here on out, which I advocate for. Also, Cannon, by the way, we love you too, bud. You showed some wheels on that fake field goal.
That's true.
Big props to that too. But yeah, seeing Gramatica hit that 57 yarder, it just feels good when you can cross the 50 and be like, hey, this could be a successful drive. I don't think as Bulls fans we've had that for a very long time. It's got to be like the 20-25. You're like, all right, I feel somewhat okay.
Right.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but wouldn't you think like the kicking position is a little bit mental, right? So why are you going to toggle with that? Gramatica comes in and bangs like two field goals from distances we haven't seen as Bulls fans in a long time, dude.
Yeah.
And oh, then God. You just bring in Cannon, right? And so like, I mean, like Adam said, bringing it back with that fake field goal got my heart rushing a little bit. That was pretty awesome. But like, come on.
Yeah. No, that's one thing I think we will see that this week. I don't think that Golish is going to play any games. I think that he's made his evaluation. I would definitely imagine. So, all right, I'll kick it to our next segment here. So like I mentioned earlier, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through each Pro Bowl that was active this past season in professional baseball from all levels. We're talking independent, major leagues, minor leagues, international. So it should be a fun segment. And I'm going to let the guys chime in as they wish. But the first guy that I'll talk about, again, we're going alphabetical by last name. So if you have a player that you're interested in hearing, just stay tuned. We will cover all of them. So the first one is Austin Adams. He is probably one of our most successful major league USF alumni baseball players out there. He just keeps doing his thing every year. He's 33 years old now. He still held down a huge role out of the Oakland A's bullpen. He threw 41 and a third innings out of the bullpen there, had a 3.92 ERA. If you've ever seen him pitch, he just throws sliders. It's pretty fun to watch.
Just got to give him props at this point, because I mean, he's always found a spot on a roster here for a good portion. I think 8 or 9 years, maybe even longer. Don't quote me on that.
No, it's been about 8 or 9 years, I would say.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm having some weather issues. Uh, But I just wanted to say that just major props to him. He's played out at Oakland for this season, and it has not been easy out in Oakland this season with what they're going through. We're going to touch on that a little bit later. But just the crowds and just everything going on the outside, you just know it hasn't been easy to be an A's player. And so to be that, to be, like you said, to hold down such a good position for them, just props to Austin Adams. He's been a really good bull and a really good pro.
Yeah, it's really impressive what he's done over his career. And yeah, he's had over his career, he's pitching 188 major league games. He has a lifetime ERA of 4.1. I mean, yeah, he's really impressive. He broke into the major leagues in 2017, and he's pitched in the major leagues every year since. So again, one of the most successful major league bulls of all time, honestly.
He always
So
had his way with my Rangers too. It was like always a bittersweet thing seeing his quirkiness on the mound coming out of the bullpen because he literally dominates the Rangers. I don't have the numbers right in front of me. I was trying to pull them up, but I can't find them.
No, he's really an interesting watch too, because I mean he literally just throws his nasty slider. I mean, to make a living off of one pitch just shows you like how good that pitch actually is. Matt.
Yeah, and for our listeners who had the chance to listen to the Jim Lauk interview, he pointed out Austin Adams in particular about, he was by far and away, one of the most talented pitchers that he's ever seen for USF. So, obviously that translated into the major leagues and has had an awesome career in the majors.
Yeah. Okay, I saw your hand. Okay, so the next guy I wanted to touch on is Nelson Alvarez. He's 26 years old. He spent some time with he was with the Bulls, I want to say up until 2019. But he has kind of been just trucking along through the minor leagues. He's been very consistent as a pitcher. This season, he was actually started the season in the Tampa Bay Rays organization in double A. And he actually got traded to the Phillies in August for cash considerations. He ended up finishing out the season, I want to say, in Phillies triple A. He threw 51 in a two 51 innings this season, had a 3.48 ERA. I believe he operates mostly out of the bullpen. Obviously, we know that the Phillies have an amazing bullpen, which does feature a former USF bull that we'll talk about in a little bit. But definitely encouraging for Nelson Alvarez. He's still relatively young, 26, and I think as a pitcher, I think that like age can be even less of a limiting factor. At the end of the day, if you're somebody who can get people out, they don't really care how old you are. But yeah, so it's good to see that that he's doing well. The next guy I wanted to touch on was Drew Brutcher. We know him very well. He was with USF from 2021, and as a freshman, obviously helped the Bulls make it to their first ever Super Regional, hit that famous home run at Texas. And this season as a senior, he did well. Unfortunately, did not get drafted by a MLB club, but I know he's always had that dream of playing professional baseball, and he really deserves an opportunity, I believe, with an affiliated club. But he did what he could by going to play independent ball in the Pioneer League, and he got to play in 35 games up there after the college season ended. Played for the Ogden Raptors out in Utah. Batted 363, had a 1,085 OPS. He's still only 22 years old. I think that a professional, I mean, an MLB team could still look at him and say, hey, we're looking at a 6'6", left-handed batter who's been productive his entire college career, was very productive in independent ball. Maybe, just maybe, he'll get an affiliated opportunity in the future, considering that he's still pretty young. Matt, what you got?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out too that he had some really big time home runs when he got to Ogden as well. He pretty sure he had a couple of walk-off home runs. So, you know, he's always had the knack for the big moment, and that carried over to pro ball as well. And I think that's, you know, very much Drew Brusher-esque. And also, too, with the Ogden Raptors, if anyone hasn't had a chance yet to see that stadium, I think they may have the best backdrop in all of professional baseball. It's insane. You know, the big mountain range in the backdrop, and it's really cool. If anyone's in Utah, definitely go check out Drew Brutcher and the Ogden Raptors.
Yeah, man, who needs a batter's eye when you have that kind of backdrop? For real, though, it's super nice. One thing I just wanted to say about Brutch is he always contributes, you know, and I think he finished ninth overall on USF's total walks list, if I'm not mistaken. And in 35 games, this isn't like a huge stat or anything, but it's just always something that I've appreciated from a power hitter not being swing happy. He's struck out as many times as he's walked in his limited playing time there. So he's going to get on base. And not only was he hitting big home runs, he was hitting for power to the gaps too, which we saw more of in his senior season. He didn't get away from home run ball, but he didn't lean on it, you know, and he was hitting for power to all fields. So it's good to see him continuing to put on in Ogden, and hopefully we get to see him put on a MLB jersey real soon.
Definitely. So we'll go to the next player here. We're talking about Nick Davila. He's a pitcher that was drafted out of USF or signed as an undrafted free agent. I can't remember, but out of USF in 2020. He's 25 now. He has had some really successful seasons in the past few years. This was a tough one for him. I know in the past he had made it as high as AAA as a pitcher, which at the age of 23 or 24, whatever he was back then, that was pretty impressive what he was doing. This year, he got injured very early in the season. Back in June, it was actually a season-ending injury. He's currently with the Mariners organization, so best of luck to him and well wishes on his recovery. Hopefully we see him climbing up the ranks in 2025. The next guy is Tommy Eveld. He technically did not pitch professional baseball in 2024, but he deserves a notice here because he did announce that he is retiring from professional baseball. He took to Instagram, I believe, to announce that. But this is a guy who honestly had one of the most impressive minor league careers you could possibly have without making it to the majors. It's actually, he actually mentioned in his post that he was on the taxi squad to get his MLB debut five different times, literally sitting in the stadium, hoping that he would be added to the active roster that day. Never happens. His highest level, obviously, AAA. But what a career, though. I mean, 9 professional seasons, 236 games appeared in, career 3.13 ERA. He really maintained that role that he had when he was at USF about 10 years ago, when he was the closer for the Bulls, and they made the NCAA tournament in Mark Kingston's first season back in 2015. But he did also announce that he is starting his own business, home renovations. I would give more detail, but it's in Raleigh, North Carolina. So I don't know how much of our audience is there, but happy for him and glad to see that he's doing some good things. The next guy is Jimmy Herget, also one of probably our most famous and well major league tenured Bulls. He's 31 years old now. I want to say he was on that same team with Tommy Eveld back in 2015. Maybe he was there just, yeah. And he's had a really good major league career as someone coming out of USF. He's appeared in 129 major league games. He's currently in the Cubs organization. He went to the Cubs in midseason, I think, as part of a trade with the Braves. But he did play in the majors this year. He threw 12 and a third innings in the majors this year with the Braves. And he also threw 34 innings in the minor leagues. So Jimmy Herget, kind of similar to Austin Adams, you know, a guy that's in their 30s, has carved out a nice major league career as a pitcher out of USF. Just really good to see. Really good to see. The next guy I'll touch on is Jack Jasiak. We know him very well. He played for USF from 2020 until 2022. He was a key part of that team that, again, with Drew Butcher, as we talked about earlier, made that super regional back in 2021. He's currently in the Cleveland Guardians organization. That's actually where he was drafted out of USF. He's a pitcher. He had a pretty good season this year, even though at USF he was really a starting pitcher for us. I mean, he was our Friday night guy. He really did some incredible things for the Bulls, even making that run in 2021. He had probably the best start I've ever seen in person when he just kind of went through Tulane. I don't want to say it was Tulane that in the conference tournament. But this year he had 67 innings at a 4.57 ERA, very similar numbers as he had in A ball with the Guardians last year, but he did improve his strikeout to walk ratio up to 2.82, which is a really good figure. He improved that from 1.35 last year. So he's progressing as a pitcher. So that's good to see, Matt.
Yeah, and also a big congratulations to Jack and Vivian Jasiak on their expecting a child. They announced in July, so just wanted to give a big shout out to them and wish them best of luck as well.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. So he's still only 23 years old. Playing in affiliated ball, putting up solid production. We know what he's capable of. I mean, something to keep in mind too. I think towards the end of his career at USF, he was dealing with some injuries. I don't think he's reached his final form yet. I think that when he gets to his potential, you could really see him maybe make a rapid climb up the minors, hopefully next year in 2025. The next guy, still another player from that 2021 team. And you can kind of start to see why that 2021 team did some of the things that they did when you consider that one of the best pitchers from that team was Orion Kerkering, who is a staple in the bullpen for one of the best teams in Major League Baseball, Philadelphia Phillies. This year for the Phillies, he threw 62 and a third innings out of the bullpen, had a 2.31 ERA. He had the third lowest ERA on the Phillies for bullpen pitchers. Last year was really interesting because he made his, I want to say he made like his major league debut in the playoffs or very close to the end of the year last year. But now we're going to get to see him in the playoffs for 2 years in a row, and he'll probably play an even more prominent role than he did then. So just really, it's really awesome what Orion is doing, especially when you consider that when he was picked out of USF in 2022, he didn't even have his best college season in 2022. He was kind of experimenting with some different roles that the coaches had him in with starting and closing, but his best role always was as a closer back end guy, and that is what the Phillies are using him as. He's a guy that he gets a lot of love on from the Pitching Ninja sometimes. Really, he really likes Orion's, I want to say his sweeper. He's got a nasty, nasty slider sweeper, just like Austin Adams in some ways. So Orion, only 23 years old, second year in the majors, doing a lot of great things. Really awesome to see. The next guy I want to touch on is Carmine Lane. He's also 23. He was also on that 2021 Super Regional team. And he actually was drafted out of USF back in 2022 as well. He was drafted in the 19th round by the Marlins as a catcher. He ended up playing with the Marlins in 2022, 2023, and this year as well, he was with the Marlins. He ended up getting released by the Marlins, I want to say midsummer. June or July, wasn't having his best year at the plate. But you know, he is a guy that loves baseball, as we all know, and he's finding a way to stay in the game. He actually ended up going to the Independent Ball MLB Draft League, which, if people don't know how the MLB Draft League works, before the MLB draft, it's used as a showcase for college players to help boost their stock to get drafted. But after the MLB draft is over, it is used as a professional independent baseball league for players to get opportunities to maybe sign back with an affiliated club. That is what Carmine did this season after being released by the Marlins. He had a brief tenure there. He played in six games, but he did bat 357. So it's good to see him get back into it. Hopefully he sticks with it and continues to have some success.
Yeah, we love Niner on this show. It's great to see him still getting after it. And on a little bit more of a personal note, prayers up to Tom, Mr. Lane. I know he's going through it a little bit. And just prayers to his family. Tom and Sherry are really close to this podcast, and I just wanted to make sure that we gave him a little bit of a shout out.
Absolutely. And also, you know, it's obviously a challenging year for Carmine Lane personally, not only with his father, but his girlfriend, Alexis Buckman, who was, we know, battling cancer for the last 2 years, passed away earlier this year. So again, obviously thoughts and prayers to him and his family and everything. But I'm really impressed with his spirit to continue on and fight his way back into independent baseball. And, you know, hopefully we can see him getting another opportunity with an affiliated club. All right. So the next player that I want to touch on is Brad Lord. He had a amazing season. Again, another player from the 2021 Super Regional team. A lot of these guys are doing really well. Brad Lord had a really good season in the Nationals organization as a pitcher, as a starting pitcher. I want to say he began the year in regular A ball and worked his way up to high A, then to double A, and even finished the year in the Nationals triple A team up in Rochester. He had a great season. He had 25 starts across all minor league professional levels, and he had a 2.43 ERA. For a long time, he was in the top two or three in the minor leagues in lowest ERA. So he was a guy that was drafted out of USF, I want to say, in like the 18th round or something, and he wasn't on any Nationals draft lists. Or any Nationals prospect lists, but he's worked his way up into being a ranked prospect in the Nationals organization. He's a guy that we had on the show earlier this year, and he really did share a lot of secrets to his success. So like how is he able to go from, you know, an 18th, 19th round pick to a guy that is now a ranked prospect in the Nationals organization? We had him on in episode 50, back on August 6th. Definitely check that out if you want to learn more about his story. But yeah, John.
Yeah, I wanted to double down with what you were saying. He did. I wanted to look that up for you. He began the season at High A Wilmington, and after one start, was promoted to Double A Harrisburg on April 9th, and then finally promoted again on June 20th to Triple A. Mark, that you did a really good job covering like his stat line, but another thing that I wanted to cover was that. The Nationals every year have what's called the Nationals Way Award, and it's presented to the organization's minor leaguers who best demonstrate the professionalism, leadership, loyalty, passion, selflessness, durability, determination, and work ethic required to play the game the Washington Nationals way. And if anything speaks outside of the numbers on a stand-up guy like Brad, that's it. And for me, that goes a long way. I mean, he already got the recognition that he needed in the promotions, and then the addition to the top top 30 prospects in the Nationals organization. Like, guys, we're talking about a prospect list that has names like Dylan Cruz on it, okay? And he's finishing at the top of the list with those guys, and that's something that is remarkable. And on a personal level, if for those who listen to our show, you should already know, but I believe he's getting married at the end of the year.
Yep.
So we love to see that, and best of luck to the newlyweds come December. I believe it's is when it's supposed to happen.
Yes. Man.
Yeah, and then also kind of just bringing it back to his season. As you mentioned, he really started out the year with, you know, one of the lowest ERAs in minor leagues, and he struggled a little bit towards the end of the season. But one thing that affected that was during his, I think it was his third or fourth to last start, he was hit on the hand, and you know, that affected his pitching delivery and stuff like that. I think he missed like two or three starts, but then he finished out the year. I think he had three starts to finish out the year, and his first two starts back weren't his best, but his last start was, you know, his back to his normal self. So look to see him coming back next year stronger and better than ever.
Yeah, definitely really, really exciting what's going on with Brad, for sure. The next guy I want to touch on, again, another player who did not actually play in professional baseball in 2024, but there's a very good reason for that. He was recovering from Tommy John surgery, I believe that's what it was. And he is obviously one of our most famous Pro Bowls. He was the first ever USF baseball alumni to make a Major League Baseball All-Star game. And that is no one other than Shane McClanahan. You know, not a lot needs to be said about him. I think that everybody who knows the sport of baseball knows who he is. Yeah, John, I'm not sure if you had anything you wanted to add about the impending return of Shane McClanahan 2025.
Well, I mean, anytime he takes the mound, the American League Cy Young race gets that much more interesting. And I absolutely blame the Yankees for his injury, because he came out of his start on August 2nd, 2023 against the Yankees. He was 11-2 with a 3.29 ERA prior to that. So, like everything else in baseball, it is absolutely the Yankees' fault.
Yep. As a Yankees but fan, I can't argue.
Did see that he was doing some flat ground work, and there was actually some whispers of him, if the Rays were actually in contention, that he could have pitched this season. So we love to see positive updates from the Rays on Shane, for sure.
Yeah, no, that's really good. It's really good. So yeah, his return in 2025 is going to be fun. I mean, not only because he is a USF baseball alumni, but he also gets to play in the city where he played college baseball, and he's actually from the Gulf Coast of Florida. He grew up in, I want to say, Cape Coral, close to Naples. So just really another amazing story from USF baseball alumni. I mean, we've already covered a lot of, you know, exciting stories with these guys. But yeah, Shane, obviously, it's going to be great to see him play for the local Major League Tampa Bay Rays next season, for sure. The next guy I wanted to cover is Hunter Mink. He's a guy that played for the Bulls up until this season, actually. He started his career actually with the Florida Gators and transferred to USF in 2022 to play with his twin brother, Tanner. He had a really solid career with the Bulls from 2022 until 2024 as a starting pitcher, primarily. He did spend some time as a closer, but mostly he was a starter. Another guy who from this year's team did not see his name called in the MLB draft, but still has aspirations to play professional baseball, ended up going to Florence, Kentucky to play for the Florence Yawls of the Frontier League. Got to play in five games there. He made five starts on the mound, 21 and a third innings with a 3.38 ERA. So definitely did everything he could to impress and hopefully earn his way with a affiliated club in the future.
I'll tell you what, they really have a lot of fun in those independent league baseball games. I get to see some Twitter posts from the Florence Yalls, and it's a big deal to make it to the independent league, and they do it up pretty big over there.
Yeah, no, they get some really good crowds. I mean, their social media team is really fun. Yeah, I'm really happy for him that he got to keep playing baseball, and he did well. So even if he doesn't get to an affiliated club next season, I think that the Florence Yalls will be very happy to have him back, with considering how well he did while he was there. So
And if y'all don't follow the Florence Yalls yet on Twitter, definitely recommend it.
for sure, for sure. Another guy that was actually on the Bulls this past season and spent his entire career with the USF Bulls. He was actually a freshman on the 2021 Super Regional team and played a little bit of a role on that team as a kind of a depth piece. But then the last 3 years of his career, 2022 through 2024, he became an everyday player. That's Joaquin Moncay, a catcher. He again, another guy that did not see his name called in the 2024 MLB draft, but to keep his baseball career going, he did play in the MLB draft Indy League, which is the same league that Carmine went and played in. He played in 25 games. He played for the Trenton Thunder, which he actually used to be a minor league affiliate of the New York Yankees. He batted 296 there, and he did pretty well. So, good to see him progressing.
Yeah, I think with Joaquin, I was surprised he didn't get a major league affiliated opportunity, especially being a solid hitting catcher. But like you said, glad to see that he did get his opportunity to continue his career.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, that's another guy that could potentially parlay that into a affiliated opportunity if things break right. So, next guy that I want to talk about, this is a fun one as well. A lot of fun ones here. Coco Montez. He's a guy that was drafted out of USF in 2018. He was a big part of the Mark Kingston era, even played for head coach Billy Moll in 2018. Was drafted out of USF, and he is a guy that has actually played in the major leagues. I want to say it was 2022 or three where he made his major league debut. He's hit a home run up in the major leagues. He's done a lot of really good things in professional baseball. He was a part of the Rockies organization his entire affiliated career. And again, made it to the major leagues with them. Was always a consistent producer in AAA for them, Albuquerque Isotopes. But he's a guy who I think he knows his value. He knows that, the way he was producing in AAA, he really should have been in the major leagues more. It is hard, the Rockies, because like the only good part of their team is like their middle infield, and they do have two good middle infielders. So he was kind of stuck behind them. So he did something that's pretty unique, but I think was a pretty smart idea of what he ended up doing. He ended up going to play in Japan. And then he just kind of left the Rockies organization in the middle of the season and went to Japan. So that was very interesting.
You just props to him because that can be a very scary decision, to kind of do something outside of the box like that, go all the way over to another country, to keep playing baseball. Again, sometimes, some people kind of look at MLB as the end all be all in terms of, professional baseball, but that's just not the case. There's very competitive, professional baseball abroad, one of them being in Japan, the Nippon Baseball League. Lots of guys that have played in the major leagues, went to Japan, played, and then came back and played again in the major leagues and vice versa. And you see a lot of, players that started their careers in Japan and then come over. The Yu Darvishes, which shout out to him, just became the first Japanese born pitcher to have 2,000 strikeouts in Major League Baseball. So again, that's a pretty big accomplishment when you consider that with some of the names like Hideo Nomo and such. But again, just really competitive baseball over there. He's done very well. The 289 batting average, 734 OPS, and again, That's not a slouch. That's a good competitive baseball league that he's playing in, and he's having a lot of success in. And I think that could actually translate into, hey, if he wants to come back over, there may be a team that looks for it. And if not, you know, that's a very fulfilling baseball career to go over there and play.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I know that in Japan, if you're playing in the top level of Japan, which he is, he's playing for the Yomiuri Giants, you can make really good money over there. You can make better money, much better money than you could as a AAA player. So that's probably another factor for him as well. As you know, he's basically the quality of a major leaguer, and he just wasn't getting that opportunity. And you know, he's making good money there. I know the fans there are great. Japan is a great country. So it's really cool to see that he made that move. Excited to see what the future holds for him. He's still 27, so really in his baseball prime, honestly. So if he spends his prime in Japan, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, that could end up being really fruitful for him. So good to see for sure. The next guy I want to touch on is a really good friend of the program, Andrew Perez. Andrew Perez is a guy who was in the minor leagues for a long time. He was part of that 2018 team with Coco Montez, Shane McClanahan, all those guys that did a lot of good things under Mark Kingston and Billy Moll, making it to those NCAA tournaments. He was drafted out of USF in 2018, made it all the way up to AAA with the White Sox, and he never quite got the chance to play in the majors yet. He's still only 26 years old. But he was not having his best season. I think it was either this year or last year with the White Sox. Ended up getting released by the White Sox, I want to say, actually right before the season started this year. Timing was a little strange on that, for sure. And he ended up, you know, continuing his professional career, went to go play in the Mexican League, did pretty well there, left-handed pitcher. He threw 35 and a third innings there, to a 4.84 ERA.
Yeah, you know, just kind of the same point we made with Montez, just kind of taking your career into your own hands and getting out of the grind. You know, you go over to Mexico to, you know, pitch fulfilling innings. If you listened to our podcast with Andrew, we talked a lot about that, the differences between, you know, playing in a major leagues kind of farm system versus going over and playing in Mexico, where you're playing in the top level. They're here to win. It's a kind of a different mindset, so he got to go kind of experience that again, which is good. I think that could further his career. And again, if you listen to that episode, there's a lot of Major League Baseball players and former Major League Baseball players playing in that league, one of which is very famous, with Trevor Bauer. If you saw some of his videos, Robinson Cano's in that league as well. Yeah. I'll kick it over to Matt here to continue.
Yeah, and not to mention also Yasiel Puig, who, you know, at one point was a superstar in the major leagues. And when you look at that Mexican league too, it's just such a fun environment for these guys to play in, and you know, for him to have that opportunity, you know, there's nothing else like it in my opinion, aside from, you know, the major leagues and maybe even the major league playoffs, because you know, those people over there, they bring the party to every game.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up, because the culture in Japan and Mexico when it comes to watching a baseball game is completely different, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up, Matt, because it's crazy. Get on YouTube, go watch some videos of just a random Tuesday night at a Mexican baseball game. It's a party. It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's awesome. If you want to hear from Andrew Perez himself, we had episode 47 with him back on June 25th. It was a really good chat with him, talk about how he has navigated his professional baseball career, which I think has now been about 7 years. So another really good guy to hear from and to learn from. Next guy I want to touch on is Carson Ragsdale. He's a guy that was drafted, one of the higher draft picks that USF Baseball has had recently, in 2020. I want to say he was a fifth round pick, and that was in the draft that only had five rounds, the shortened COVID draft. So the fact, let me make sure I'm right on that, because I think that is where he got drafted. Let's see. actually the fourth round. He was drafted in the fourth round out of USF in 2020. He's a really interesting prospect as a pitcher. He's a right-handed pitcher. He's 6'8", 225 pounds. He's a beast. He's originally from Tampa Bay area as well, Wesley Chapel. So he's a local guy, played at USF. He's in the San Francisco Giants organization. And he's a guy that started his pro career really hot. And then I want to say he missed almost a full season with an injury. I think that was back in 2022. It was very limited for him, only five innings. But this was the most innings he's ever pitched in professional baseball here in 2024. He made his way all the way up to Triple A for the first time. He ended up the season with 120 innings, 4.18 ERA. And the thing that stands out about him the most that may actually really help him crack into the major leagues is the fact that he really strikes out a lot of batters. He had 147 Ks in 120 innings. That's a 11 Ks per nine. So, yeah, Carson Ragsdale. I think he's been a ranked prospect in the Giants organization. I'm not sure if he is anymore, but he definitely has a chance to crack his way up to the majors. So another good one to see. So we have a few more left here. We're on S as a la the last name for letter S. So we have four more guys. This one is interesting. Phoenix Sanders. He's 29 years old. He also was on that 2018, 2000, that era, 2017, 2018, produced a lot of good professional baseball players. And those teams were both 2017, 2018. The Bulls made it to the NCAA tournament each of those seasons. So it's not entirely surprising that there's a lot of good pros from that era as well. But yeah, Phoenix Sanders is a guy who, climbed the minor league chain, worked his way all the way up to the major leagues in the Tampa Bay Rays organization. His story is just one that just kind of baffles me from like a professional management perspective, like the organization, because when he came up to the Rays and played, he did very well. He threw 14 and two-thirds of in 14 and two-thirds innings, had a career major league ERA of 3.07. And somehow he ended up getting released and he's not with an affiliated club. That one just doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but he is continuing his baseball career. He is playing independent baseball right now. He played this season. He threw 26 innings with a 1.73 ERA, which is what you would expect a guy that has had success in the major leagues to do when they go play independent baseball. But yeah, so that's just an interesting one. Hopefully he finds his way back with an affiliated club if he is continuing to play baseball into the future. The next guy I want to touch on is Peter Strzelecki, another guy from that era, from that 2016 through 18 era of just very good USF baseball teams. He is also a guy who, when he gets his opportunity to pitch in the major leagues, he does very well. And he has had I want to say at least three or four seasons where he's been able to pitch in the major leagues. This year he did it as well. He appeared in 10 games for the Cleveland Guardians, did great. He had a 2.31 ERA. But again, just not really getting the consistent opportunities to stay there in the majors.
Yeah, you feel for Pete a little bit because you just think he's kind of been the odd man out. In this season, he's kind of been that next guy up in the best bullpen in baseball. So sometimes there's just most of the year there just hasn't been room, and when there's been room for him, they've called him up and he's performed. It's just sometimes it's a business at the end of the day, and sometimes you just get pushed down. But you have to commend him again when he's been given the opportunity. For the most part, he's taken it. He's ran with it. He's played professional on the professional level. Again, small percentage of people can say that. So again, I just wanted to kind of point that out that, his story is a little, for me, is a little bit disappointing in the sense that, when he's been given the opportunities, he's kind of taken them, but it's just, they've been kind of a little few and far between.
Yeah, you know, it's go ahead, Matt. What were you saying?
I was going to say too, just just feel for him with really not being able to be able to have time to adjust from one level to another. And he stays up in the major leagues for a few games, and then he gets sent back down. And must be difficult as a baseball player to constantly go between different levels. And you're in one place one week, and then you're back at that same place the next week after making that jump. So definitely, just wanted to say feel for him too.
Yeah, no, for sure. But he keeps fighting on, and best of wishes to him as he continues to progress his career. He's 29 years old. Like I said, he has a decent amount of major league games under his belt. Nobody will ever be able to take that away from him. That's puts you in a extremely small percentile of people that have ever played baseball. So he's a winner regardless. He's gonna keep fighting on. He'll continue to get more major league opportunities because there's plenty of teams out there that could use a guy that has a 2.3 ERA out of the bullpen in the major leagues.
And I think he's already, started building up his major league pension also. So, if worse comes to worse, he does have some of that too.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's really good to see. A couple more names. The last name with the letter S here, Colin Sullivan. He was more from the 2021 Super Regional era. Although he's actually one of the only players that was part of both eras. He actually, I want to say he was technically on the 2018 team. Wait, 18, 19, 20. He may have been there since 2017. So he actually got to be on both of the best USF baseball eras of modern, recent memory. Colin Sullivan, he's 26 now. When USF made that Super Regional in 2021, he played a big role. He was a big starting pitcher, weekend starting pitcher for the Bulls. He ended up getting drafted out of USF to the, it was either drafted or it was UDFA. I can't remember. He may have been an undrafted, but either way, he signed out of USF with the Diamondbacks organization. Did pretty well while he was there as a starting pitcher. But towards the end of his tenure with the Diamondbacks minor leagues, his production wasn't as good. He ended up getting released by the Diamondbacks. But he's still only 26 and he is still playing. He's playing independent baseball. This is the second year in a row that he did that. He put up great production this year in independent leagues, 102 innings, 3.62 ERA. Again, there's a guy who is proving that he can do it. Maybe he'll get another opportunity at affiliated ball, but regardless, he is doing a lot of good things, playing solid at the independent level. So good to see for Colin to continue pushing his career forward.
Yeah, one thing I just wanted to point out, now that we're kind of down at the end, that we have a lot of these players that are in independent baseball, and I just kind of wanted to remind the listeners at home that, not too far, back. If we go back, these players are probably in organizations because Major League Baseball went through this or this reorganization of their minor league system where they essentially cut, a lot of these lower level teams from the organizations, and then they formed all of these, or they didn't form, but they affiliated all of these independent leagues that we're talking about our players are in to kind of fill that void. And so, I mean, you go back 10 years for some of, there we're back in that system. These players we're talking about, they're a part of organizations, right? But right now, because of that reorganization, there just isn't the room anymore. These teams don't have them. So what they have to do is they have to release them and they have to let them go to these independent, teams so that they can kind of keep playing. And they know where they are. They're right there. But again, I just kind of wanted to point that out with some of these indie ball players. You really can't think of it like they've been dropped out of professional baseball. What it is it's a reorganization, and this is essentially just another level.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. The minor leagues, the affiliated minor leagues, is smaller than it used to be, and naturally, like you said, a reorganization where a lot of these independent teams, they actually used to be affiliated teams, which is, even if you look at the team that Moncay played on, the Trenton Thunder. I
Trenton
mean,
Thunder, that's a Yankees one, right?
yeah, it was the
It used
Yankees,
to be,
and
yeah.
yeah, so it's like the amount of teams is still the same, but the amount of people who can say, yes, I'm on an affiliated team, has been reduced, but does not mean that they are not professionals. They're definitely playing professional baseball at a high level, and you'll see many stories of players that get picked up from the independent league to affiliated and can eventually make it to the majors. So as long as you're playing, that's the key. The last guy that we want to touch on here is David Villar. He is another one of the guys who has actually played in the major leagues. So a pretty decent amount of guys on our list have actually played in the major leagues, which is pretty cool to see. David Villar, he's 27 years old. Again, he was from that other great era, the 2016 through 18 era that made it to a couple of NCAA tournaments under Kingston and Mole. He is a guy who has 15 career major league home runs as a third baseman. This year, he actually played a little bit in the major leagues. He appeared in 11 major league games for the San Francisco Giants. He did not do bad when he was up. I mean, he batted 257 with a 727 OPS, but he also spent most of his year in the minor leagues, where he hit pretty well also with an 802 OPS and a 260 batting average. So again, this has actually been the recap of all of the professional baseball players that are USF baseball alumni. Hope you enjoyed that segment. We enjoyed it. We enjoyed catching up on all that and seeing how everything has been going with that.
That is all we have for today. Stay tuned in the month of October as we will be starting some coverage of fall ball. There's a lot going on there. We'll be seeing the guys start some scrimmages, and potentially maybe even some games against other schools later in the fall. But for my co-hosts, this is Mark Giardino, and for my co-hosts, Matthew Giardino, Adam Cartwright, and John Kaplan signing off for the day. Talk to you all next time.